American relations.
Throughout most of history, Asian Americans and African Americans have not stood up with each other. We need to recognize that those instances when Asians and African Americans and other people of color have risen up together are exceptional moments in U.S. history.
Crossing East Relations, a new one-hour documentary by Dime Roberts, Tuesday, June 6th at 11 a.m. on KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of What the Festival, happening June 15th through the 18th at the Wolf One Ranch in Dufour, Oregon. What the Festival is a carefully curated weekend of interactive art, 8 stages of electronic and live music, speaker series, movement classes, and more. This premier boutique festival experience is located at the edge of the Mount Hood National Forest, offering both forest and field for you to forget your day-to-day, connect with your inner child, and begin a new adventure for yourself. Again, that's What the Festival, Thursday, June 15th through Sunday, June 18th at the Wolf Run Ranch in Dufour, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Don't you know you can count me in, out, in, out, B. All right, B. All right, B.
I was going to talk to you. And good morning. This is Wednesday Talk Radio coming at you once again. Hi, I'm Paul Rowland, and I'll be with you till 9 o'clock this morning when Political Perspectives comes your way. And then a full morning of public affairs programming, as usual, here on weekdays on KBOO Community Radio. Oh boy. Yeah, as if things weren't intense enough already. So much stuff is happening. Many bad things, and we're going to talk about some of the aftermath of what happened and what's coming up on Sunday. The Joey Gibson, the transplanted, whatever he is, fascist, alt-righter. He considers himself a advocate of free speech and a patriot. Anyway, he's going ahead with his plan to demonstrate on Sunday at Terry Shrunk Plaza. I'm not sure exactly how this all came down. He perhaps was going to have it on city property, and the permit was denied. And then he went to Chapman's, to Terry Shrunk, which is federal property. I'm not sure how all that came down, but Mayor Ted Wheeler, has been asking the feds to deny a permit. It seems like they're not going to do that, and it's going to go ahead. And there is a count them 3 counter protests. One featuring a whole bunch of different organizations, seemingly organized by the International Socialist Organization, if I have my facts right, called Portland Stands United Against Hate, Sunday 12:30 to 4 at Portland City Hall, right across the street from Terry Shrunk Plaza. Another one adjacent, called No Passeron, No Nazis on Our Streets, hosted by Pacific Northwest Anti-Fascist Workers Collective and Rose City Antifa from 12 to 4 at Chapman Square. A third one, oh gosh, I thought I had copied that off. Oh yeah, just at Terry Shrunk Plaza. And that's Portland Labor Against the Fascists. Not sure exactly who they are. So they're going to be right there. So that's what's happening this Sunday. And we shall see. So let's talk about that. I want to talk about Mayor Ted Wheeler making these comments that hate speech is not protected. and he seems to be clearly wrong from a judicial point of view, which is pretty much the one that counts, the one that interprets the Constitution. And took the Washington Post to set him right in an article that came out, I believe, yesterday, saying Ted Wheeler is wrong on that. The ACLU, as predictable, has stood up for Joey Gibson and his cohort's right to protest. So there's a lot going on. The number here is 503-231-8187. I would really like to hear. I know there's a lot of people, you know, I don't know how many people listen to this show. Hopefully thousands and thousands and thousands, and you're telling all your friends and getting everybody to listen. But I'm sure there's at least a few hundred people listening, and I'm sure a number of you listen on a regular basis, and I'm sure a number of you who listen on a regular basis have never called in, and I'd really like to talk to you. Of course, we'll welcome all callers, but we would like to hear, especially from people who rarely call in, people who, you know, maybe they're just thinking and thinking and thinking, and you just can't formulate that coherent thought or what you think needs to be coherent enough to get on the radio. Don't worry about it. We'll work it out. We'll have a conversation. Take some deep breaths. These are important things. It's important to, you know, have some more community conversation. I'm not saying this is the best way to have a community conversation, certainly not. Old style public forums, town halls, where they go on for hours and hours and hours, and everybody gets to have a chance to speak their full piece and interact and have heated conversation, interaction, discussion, debate, open conflict. We need to work this stuff out. There's so many underlying differences of ideology and perspective that never get a chance to really get tested in the light of open debate. We need to do that more. I'm not saying this is the best, but it is one, and there's not a lot of opportunities on the radio dial to have open public conversation and debate. So I'm putting this out there as an opportunity. We haven't had a chance. We've had the last two shows were membership drive shows, and we know how difficult it is to have call-ins. So anyway, 231-8187, area code 503 is the number to call in. I'm going to start off by reading a couple interesting things I plucked off of Facebook and elsewhere, and maybe a couple of these articles that I picked up. So this one I picked up, someone posted on Facebook. Socialists tend to argue that fascism is not a political current like any other and should not be treated as such. Fascists are dedicated to destroying every vestige of democracy and have no misgivings about using thuggery to get their way. Mere words are not enough to defeat them. They must also be physically confronted and excluded from public space. Moreover, fascists do not seek out public platforms in order to test the strength of their ideas. What they seek is the veneer of respectability that such platforms provide, a veneer they desperately need in the aftermath of the Second World War and Hitler's Holocaust. The socialist argument is based on historical experience. Fascism first appeared in Italy in the early 1920s when Benito Mussolini organized armed squads of war veterans to terrorize the workers' movement by breaking up meetings and murdering trade unionists. The state did little or nothing to stop these black shirts, and the fascist movement rapidly grew. But thuggery on the streets was only one aspect of Mussolini's strategy. The other was to court respectability by posing as a legitimate political party and contesting elections. This two-pronged attack, pretending to be committed to democratic norms while organizing terror on the ground, has remained the characteristic defining feature of fascism ever since. The mainstream parliamentary parties in Mussolini's time did not know how to react to the fascists. They deplored the blackshirts' violence while in practice doing nothing about it and insisted that the fascists had to be treated like any other party and granted the same constitutional rights. In parentheses, I might add that the Democratic our Democratic Party seems to be taking a what you might be considered a similar tack on this. Continue with this piece. This is by Anindya Bhattacharya. I don't know anything about that person. Maybe someone out there does. I don't know where this comes from. It just appeared as if by magic on Facebook by one of my Facebook friends. Okay, so let me repeat that last paragraph. The mainstream parliamentary parties in Mussolini's time did not know how to react to the fascists. They deplored the black shirts' violence, while in practice doing nothing about it, and insisted that the fascists had to be treated like any other party and granted the same constitutional rights. The results were disastrous. Threatened with an increasingly militant workers' movement, the Italian ruling class allowed Mussolini to seize power in 1922. The fine words about democracy disappeared as the fascists abolished press freedom, suspended all democratic rights, and went about expunging every trace of opposition, protest, or criticism from their new corporate state. Just 10 years later in Germany, the same pattern repeated itself. The mainstream parties of Germany's post-war Weimar Republic, conservative, liberal, and social democrat, all united to condemn Hitler's Nazis, but insisted that they had to be challenged only through constitutional means. Once in power, Hitler threw into the concentration camps those very same people who had once defended his rights to, quote, free speech. Now, does this apply to the current situation? Is Joey Gibson analogous to Mussolini's black shirts and Hitler's brown shirts? Let me just read another piece that came. I hope he doesn't mind being named. I don't know if these are his words or he posted this, but Michael Edera, a longtime anti-right-wing organizer in Portland and Oregon. Again, somebody else posted this, but attached his name to it, so I'm just going to read it that way. It's important to understand the terrorist strategy being deployed against us. Louis Beam, an ex-KKK leader, defined it in the 1980s as, quote, the lone wolf strategy. Adapting to the defeat the Klan experienced at the hands of the civil rights movement, Beam advocated phony, quote, free speech campaigns as a cover for hate speech. He understood that this was bound to shake certain unstable individuals loose to commit the deeds that organized Klansmen used to do. Only this time, no conspiracy charges plus deniability, and the same effect of casting a chill on targeted groups. So, blank free speech in this case. Okay, I think that certainly applies. Okay, well, that might be enough to go on. Again, I was at that 82nd Avenue protest. Joey Gibson, he seems to be a somewhat disciplined figure as opposed to certainly the Max Train killer, who don't want to get too deep into this. To me, I don't know. He was in prison for 6 years. By a lot of accounts, he wasn't, certainly not overtly racist before that. He apparently had black friends. You know, I don't know what any of this means. A lot of this, you know, comes off of Facebook and Twitter. So, you know, just take all this with a grain of salt. But there seems to be somewhat of a portrait emerging of this person. I'm not defending, justifying, never would do that, of course. I think there's a certainly total failure of our institutions and a dire cultural sickness, if you will, a general climate of white supremacy that has too long gone under-recognized, to say the least, that infects people and I think, to my mind, becomes the content for some people's own mental instability. You know, I know it's a difficult question, but certainly people like Joey Gibson are not out there doing these kind of acts. He's, I think, much more along the lines of that last piece I just wrote, you know, a strategy of masking this rise of what people call the alt-right, which is, I don't know, just kind of a, I don't know, language might be just sort of camouflage language itself for what does seem to be resurgent fascism. I know it's also easy to use that term. You know, none of us probably listening have ever directly confronted a fascist regime. You know, my father never talked about it. He grew up under Mussolini in Italy, but he never talked about it with me. I certainly read up on it, have some sense of it. I certainly did talk to people who had fought directly, militarily even, in the Italian resistance, and might have some, if they were still around to hear, might have some similar words to some of those I read. Advice to us now, it's kind of new territory for a lot of us. We're all trying to figure this stuff as we go along. I don't claim to have any final answers or strong answers, but I think we do need to look seriously and discuss and organize. So 503-231-8187, that's the number to call in. I'm talking about the rallies coming up, the so-called free speech rally. Joey Gibson has been putting on these, and not just him. You know, we see this all over the place. This, you know, this free speech and the this whole rhetoric of that the, you know, sort of putting the quote left, you know, the left in the position of shutting down free speech. You know, like by shutting down people speaking on campuses, they're playing to this sort of idea of freedom in the United States, and which is of course something that one of the tropes that Trump played upon, and trying to gain that ground that everybody is. That perhaps they have been more successful than the left at organizing. Certainly Trump was in gaining the presidency. Certainly the Democratic Party has, to a large extent, abdicated seriously organizing in that, whatever you want to call it, middle America, working class, middle class, the people who've suffering from globalization and the economic downturn, certainly since the 1970s, the economics have been going against what people superficially think of as this American dream, the idea you can rise up the ladder of progress, and so many people are being left behind, and they're, you know, seizing upon either their unconscious or unconscious biases, racism, misogyny, and of course the otherization, blaming other people, which fascism feeds off of in a vampire way. I can just go all over the place with this, but let's talk about it. 503-231-8187. Oh, we've already got a caller that I didn't realize. Mimi, go ahead, you're on the air.
Well, the articles and comments from Facebook and wherever else that you read earlier in the show were really great to put out there. I just pulled up to City Hall, and I want people to know, first of all, who are people in Portland. Today's a crucial City Council session at 9:30, and what we, the people, will be talking about, whether Ted wants to or not, is going to be Nazi cops on the Portland police force securing space for the Klan. I just call them the Klan because it's a lot easier than getting caught up all of their fake terminologies. You know, I guess the real terminology is for them, but it all means the same thing. It's all about hate. And so at 10 outside City Hall, right outside the doors, there's going to be a speaking that I believe Don't Shoot Portland is putting together. So for folks who are just getting up or whatever, come down to City Hall today. What we've seen over the last few years, from my perspective, in this city is it's not just the last few years. It's the last many, many decades. It's the last 200 years. It's the last however long Oregon has been a state of absolute solid racism that has never been broken down. And we've been trying really hard for the last, you know, whatever, 10 years to break this down. And what ends up happening is we know that there are Nazi cops. Those Nazi cops get back on the force if they ever get off the force. Those Nazi cops, the same cops, or the entire police force, whether they're Nazis or not, supporting white supremacy, go out to the rally that you were out at, Paul, and protect the murderer who just killed two people and wounded Micah severely. They protected him at that rally. They circled him. I've watched the video. Many of us have watched the video. You were there. I was afraid to go. I'm no longer afraid. I will be there on Sunday. I will be anywhere and everywhere on Sunday that needs to have people be in support against this fascism, against this hate. And for anybody who is afraid, I'm reaching out to you to say now is the time to locate that little bit of courage that you have to stand up, do what Micah did, stand up, continue to stand up for those of us who have against the hatred. Yesterday, I went to the arraignment along with many others of the murderer. I don't like to say his name, calling him the murderer. And while we weren't allowed in to support Micah, and while we were in the hallway, a Nazi supporter of the murderer came up the hallway, and we stopped him, and we questioned who he was there to see because none of us could get in. And he said, I'm here to support Christian. That's the guy. And we made him leave. You know, we cornered him in the hallway. We wanted to find out who he was with. We wanted to find out his name. We wanted to find out who he's hurt. And his response was, I have shed blood for my race. And Ted Wheeler has not been a help to any of this since he's been in. I have so much to say, Paul. Oh my God. He has supported racism. He has not met with Teresa Raiford, who was demanding meetings with him early on in his term. And yesterday he met with the organizer of the Klan rally for Sunday at City Hall. He called him and said, come on in, you know? And this is, I'm just saying that this is what racism looks like. We have a mayor who will meet with a Klan member and not meet with the head of an organization in Portland doing such good things to change laws against racism. That's our mayor, and he needs to go. So if anybody is also in support of the mayor leaving, voice your concerns over this blatant racism of his. It's really abhorrent and it's dangerous. We've been telling him, people have been telling him about what happened at the protest you were at, Paul, on 82nd, and nobody did anything. Nobody did anything about those cops, you know, protecting him. And look what happened.
You know, let me just say
one thing, okay. One thing, and that is about the free bus pass, because that's freaking crucial. He said to all of those Klan members, we're going to give you guys free bus passes today at that rally. You know, for what? And he responded, the mayor responded, for what? He said so that everybody could get out safely. And you know who was really afraid? Everybody, every person of color was afraid when he did that. And look what happened. That same person killed two people and slashed Micah. This is what happens when you don't understand racism.
All right.
Sorry to interrupt you, Paul.
No. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I was there. I mean, as I say, I don't want to get too deep into this, but the reason that the cops were protecting that man there was because he basically wasn't allowed into the rally by Joey Gibson and them. I don't know the story behind that. And he was like this lone dude screaming crazy stuff, you know, right in the faces of all the counter protesters. And he risked, I mean, the cops, you know, essentially they had to protect him because he was like by himself.
No, you arrest that person. If you can shoot in the head a black boy who's on his hands and knees and shoot him in the head, telling the world that you were afraid, that the cops were afraid of this boy who didn't have a gun. If you can shoot in the body a young girl running away from the cops, because why shouldn't she? Because they're going to hurt her, and they did, and they killed her. If our cops can do all of that with, because people are black, they can arrest this guy screaming hate speech at everybody at a rally. You don't.
But it's not illegal. Hate speech isn't actually illegal. So
it's very illegal to shoot black people who have no guns.
Right, but these are okay. There's no need to get into debate about this particular instance, I don't think. But I'm certainly not defending this person. I'm just trying to describe the situation that I saw, because I think it's important to continue to be as accurate as possible, regardless of our beliefs about these things.
And accuracy killed. That's what happened. We all watched. We all saw what happened.
Okay.
What you're saying is accurate. And that guy got on a bus and he slashed the throats. He did everything he said he was going to do. If anybody got in his way, that's what he was going to do.
Right. Well,
and no one arrested him.
Yeah, well, the incident before where he obviously apparently threw something on a woman, I don't know if the police were involved there. Anyway, we should get other people's perspectives. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I agree.
What time is people going to meet down there at City Hall again?
The city council begins at 9:30. We're asking everybody to show up. Everybody has a voice. Everybody should use your voice today. And at 10 o'clock outside of City Council is going to be a speak-in right outside City Council, City Hall.
Thank you so much, Mimi. Okay. This is a very intense subject. So again, we're talking about what's going to happen this Sunday. We're talking about what's been happening this Sunday. Again, we're talking about this whole idea of free speech and hate speech, which we got into just then, a difficult subject because constitutionally the courts have ruled that hate speech is actually protected. There's a lot of precedence on this. The ACLU is standing up. Regardless of one's personal feelings about it, there's apparently not much to be done juridically, so we have to organize in different ways, perhaps, and that's the point of those pieces that I read. Let's go to our next caller. Jenny, you're on the air. Hello? I guess you're not on the air. Sorry. Let's go to Sunny. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for bringing this topic so important forward. I want to say I appreciate always, Paul, that you have a naturally peaceable, gentle, yet strong manner about you, which I think springs from your whole self. And I also want to say I appreciate the previous caller, the woman. I like her fervency. I like her spirit. I think accuracy does matter. I did not see the previous March protest that this clearly very deranged, crazy, evil individual attended. Perhaps the police were surrounding him because he was swinging a baseball bat.
Well, they took his baseball bat away from him, right at the very beginning, and then he continued to go around ranting and raving. And as I said, the rest of the he was obviously like so over the top that other people, everybody felt that they didn't want. I think probably Joey Gibson and the others didn't want him around because he was spouting the type of racism that I personally think that they feel, but they're too canny to speak publicly. And so he was probably only going to attract negative attention to them. That's my interpretation anyway.
Well, he could have been their kind of cathartic outlet type person. And then again, we do not know completely the depth of their views on everything. I think a person can be a Trump supporter without being a full-tilt racist or even a racist. Maybe they've really gone pretty far over to the conservative corner and they just want to believe everything desperately because clearly the country is in bad shape. But I do stick by the ACLU's position that they should have their day to speak, because freedom of speech is extremely, extremely important, and the Nazis previously were allowed this to march around Ohio. That doesn't mean we don't keep our ears sharp and our eyes open and keep our hearts open, too, to a degree, to work some peace out of this. And what I wanted to say is we have to point this out, that the fellow's rant on Max also was against all religion. I'm not a religious person myself. I'm American Indian, and we believe that there are many paths, that each person should walk their own path. We believe in freedom very, very, very deeply. But it seems like a lot of his attitude was also averse to anything associative with religion. So if anyone wants to put him in the ultra-racist conservative Christian corner, I think they're mistaken, because he was also speaking against Christians. He's just deranged, deranged, deranged. And what I want to say, and he's worse than that, what I want to say, though, is we have an accumulation of bad medicine at this time in this country, associative with decades of bad drugs, bad parents, bad schools, bad movies, bad music, a lot of bad stuff piling up in people's psyches and in the culture. And I say we understand that at this time there's also an awakening occurring. And I think those beautiful young men on the Max showed they acted upon this greater feeling that is still with the majority of American people, that we do want to live in peace with one another. We want to allow each person total freedom in their life as long as they're responsible. And let's pay attention, because we are the people of great good medicine, and let's reclaim it. And there are lots of things that we can do to restore these good things. And if they have this opportunity to march and protest, which I think they should still be allowed to, let's show that we carry on with peace and dignity and strength, and we're going to keep standing this way.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Sonny.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. The issue of a peaceful de-escalation versus resistance and confrontation is something I've gotten to in my show. There's different approaches towards things. Of course, the issue of, you know, that who was it? Chamberlain, the Prime Minister of England, was accused of being of appeasement, and some people accused a number of Democratic Party and others of appeasement in not calling out Trump for what he is. That whole thing I read about the idea of the democratic institutions, the various political parties, various political forces, social forces in Italy and Germany during the rise of fascism, basically going through constitutional, institutional means to combat them, and the historical interpretation that was not sufficient. What do you do? The ACLU is obviously along those lines, is saying that you have to let it go. And that's true according to our institutional juridical framework. Is this a paradox that we need to somehow get beyond? How do we get beyond it? Okay, we got a couple other callers. Matt, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd just like to encourage everybody, especially the couple callers ago, the one female, is not to mix the issues and to go on fact. Don't be mixing everything up and clouding what's already cloudy. I mean, this is the time where we need to focus and pay attention to what's really going on and not mix it up.
What are you referring to specifically here?
Well, you know, the subject, you know, we're talking about this deranged individual, and you start mixing in, oh, well, it's okay to, you know, people are shooting black people and people are shooting unarmed this. And it's like, you know, that's happening, but that's not what we're kind of trying to address here. And so when you know, talking about how the mayor's meeting with, the Nazi group, that's his job. I mean, if he doesn't meet with this rally that's going to happen, then is he not doing his job? I mean, that's just pretty standard. So when you get people that start spouting off saying, oh, they're bad people because they're meeting with this person or that person or not with this, perhaps maybe the people they're not meeting with really aren't that important in terms of, you know, they've got their direction and they're doing their thing and they're doing good. So maybe, you know, they can be kind of shelved while you got things that require more attention. You know, when you have negative things going on, they require that attention. And I think people fail to understand that. You know, they get that idea in their head that, you know, right and wrong, it just seems like, you know, it's pretty typical of what's going on in the world. Everybody's getting so polarized.
Well, what do you think? What do you think about this? What do you think about Joey Gibson?
Concrete on one side or the other.
What do you think? But what do you think about the Joey Gibson free speech rally on Sunday?
You know, I honestly, I've been pretty busy and I haven't been paying too much attention to it.
Oh, okay.
Honestly, that's the alt-right, correct?
Well, that's what some people call it.
Rally.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got a right to protest. Everybody's got a right to speak. We don't have to like it. We don't have to agree with it, but that's where we live.
Okay.
And if we take that away, then pretty much, then this country isn't this country anymore.
All right.
I mean, we don't have to like what people say, but, you know, they do have that right, just as those same people don't like what some of the other people have to say. And that just seems, like I said, that is the real issue here.
Well, do you think there's a danger of fascism in this country?
Yeah, it's a polarization, you know, that you got people that are trying to be, you know, better than good, and you have people that are trying to be worse than bad.
Okay. And, well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And either group is not in the middle, and they just keep polarizing farther apart. And when that happens, you're going to find no middle ground.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We got another caller. Miriam, you're on the air.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to comment that I went to the arraignment yesterday, and it's true, I didn't get in. But I'll tell you, it was scary. That crowd of young women, there were about a dozen, 12, 15 of them. So this one who called in was one of them. I have never seen such a hateful group of people. They were angry because they were like a lynch mob, you know? If they had been able to get their hands on that guy.
Well, wait a second. That's be careful using that language here.
Well, that was the way it felt.
Yeah.
Well,
have you ever seen a lynch mob? I mean,
that was what I thought to myself. I thought this must be what it was like in the South when they would lynch somebody. There was
who
were angry at the cops. You know, I mean, I went there. I know our justice system is corrupt and screwed up in a lot of ways, but it's what we've got to work with. I want to see this guy who did the murder go through that system and get convicted, and, you know, this is how our system is supposed to work. So the sheriffs who were there were trying to keep order, but these young women were out of control. They were crazy. They were hateful. It really scared me. I've never seen anything like that. If it had been a bigger crowd, it would have been really scary. Fortunately, it's a small crowd, but...
Do you think they're scarier than the people who are going to be doing this Patriot prayer on Sunday?
I think they're about the same level.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because I hear a fair number of people sort of making that analogy. And in fact, the previous caller was almost saying somewhat similar. Do you you not see a danger? Do you not? What about the argument I put forward saying that these free speech rallies are basically a cover for an emergent fascism?
Well, I think that's true. You know, I mean,
so how do you contrast fascism if the institutional framework is not capable of contrasting it?
What do you mean the institutional framework is not?
Well, that's the argument I put out. The first thing I read this morning, I don't know if you heard it, was basically a long disquisition, basically saying that the institutional parties and the political forces at the time in Mussolini's Italy and Hitler's Germany basically treated the fascists like a normal political party, when in reality it really wasn't. Mm-hmm. And so they basically allowed it to gain enough traction that then it took over everything. And so there's some people who are giving an analogy between the current time and that time, and that it's not actually, you can't just confront it through the normal constitutional or institutional means.
Hmm. Yeah, I didn't tune in that early, so I didn't hear that. I don't know. But I will say that, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this freedom of speech this last, 10 years, because things have been getting worse and worse. And freedom of the press. I mean, if you allow complete freedom of the press, you have things like Fox News that just tell lies. I mean, it's a paradox, like you said, about free speech. I don't know about the whether the political institutions can stop fascism. I don't know. The only thing that I would say in response, I think other people have said this, that Germany really had not been a democracy for very long before the 30s, whereas we have been more or less, if you want to call it, you know, it's not a real democracy, but what we've got here has been going on for 200 years, so I think our institutions are stronger and can stop it, but who knows? I mean, we hope for the best, But I will say, the similarity between these angry young women and, you know, the hate speech on the alt-right.
So is this...
I didn't see it.
So is this, I mean, because, let me just put this point blank, because I think part of me feels that sometimes people don't like public demonstrations of strong anger because they don't feel able to express it themselves or something. I mean, you know, is it because the strength of it or what was it?
I felt that these young women, if they could have gotten their hands on this guy, they would have murdered him.
Well, that's speculation on your part. I mean,
there was that kind of energy.
Well, okay. Well, thank you for calling.
It scared me. Yeah.
And these fears are, you know, we need to get into that outside our comfort zones and explore these fears. And I'm not saying I wasn't there, so I don't know your experience.
I mean, I wasn't afraid for myself.
Right.
You know, I was afraid for what they would do. And it seemed very self-righteous and, you know, just the same kind of energy that's on this radical right, and they don't see themselves that way. That's what scares me, is they don't see themselves that way. They see themselves as, I don't know, some kind of champions of the good, but they're what we're speaking. They wanted vigilante justice. That's what they wanted. And I don't want to see vigilante justice return.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know why that term brought up. Obviously, you know, when you think of vigilante justice, you think of, you know, Westerns in our sort of, you know, mythos of the United States. You also think of what the caller just brought up, Miriam, the idea of lynch mobs, which I think we should be very careful about using that terminology in contexts other than the ones they were actually used, but that's certainly an instance of vigilante justice. But, you know, I also think of the paradox of, I was talking about fascism and the resistance to fascism, and, you know, I know that there were, there were instances where people did have to take justice into their own hand and do something about, you know, fascist informers, or sometimes they may even unjustly accuse someone, but there were instances where they had to actually do something because their own survival as a resistance movement was endangered by the existence of infiltrators. I'm not suggesting we do that to infiltrators, but, you know, think of these police infiltrators, gosh, in the UK, who, I don't know if people have heard about this, who actually went so far as to enter into long-term sexual relations and romantic relationships with activists, animal rights, environmental activists, in particular in that case, actually, and fathered children, and never came clean about it, and then went about their lives afterwards. And most of them actually were married and had other families. Anyway, I digress. I'm not seeing a, you know, I'm not sure what kind of justice would have been appropriate. I know they're having to, the police there are having to pay out large sums after to the victims of that. Anyway, going far afield here. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, Dr. Gerald Horn describes the alliance between the British and African Americans against the slave system of the U.S. in his book, Negro Comrades of the Crown. At 10 is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. 11, Project Censored examines sexism within the media, especially at Fox News. And thank everybody who's supported us in our latest membership drive and on an ongoing basis. And if you haven't yet, you can easily do so by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. I believe we have Joseph, if you're still patiently waiting. Go ahead, you're on the air.
I am here. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh. I hope you're not on speakerphone.
I am not, sir.
Okay.
I am not.
Go ahead.
I want to just say that I am truly amazed and blown away by that last woman. I understand that she was a little taken aback, but these people she was talking about have been involved, because of, well, from what I can tell, been involved in trying to fight for racial justice and all kinds of other things that have to do with people of color. And so I can understand their anger. I was angry when I first heard this. I was shocked and angered. All the things you go through when you witness or hear something so horrific as what happened last Friday. So, and I can't even repeat on the air the thoughts that went through my mind, but these are thoughts. And the kinds of people that poor man is, and I say poor man, and I have only taken this long to come to that. That man who committed that atrocity is actually a victim himself. And I'm not justifying what he did. I'm a Southern Poverty Law Center member, and I'm an ACLU member. And even though I had those feelings, it took me a few days to come around to what I feel was rational thought. Nobody was in danger from me because I was just seething with this stuff personally. But after listening to others, such as people on KBOO, people at work talking about this, I've come to see that, you know, there are better ways to go about this. And again, going back to what she said, she cannot presume to know what was in the minds of those women. They were merely angry. She has no idea what they were going to do, none whatsoever. So I just want to say, last, because I know you have not much time left, that I am amazed at the fact that that man had a bat. And in my opinion, if that had been a black man or a black boy, then it would have been a different outcome. They would have probably thrown him to the ground, tasered him, everything. But I believe in my heart that because he was a white man, they didn't do anything. If you consider a bat as a weapon, it's a weapon if you're not at a baseball field. And I don't know. I haven't heard you talk back, but maybe I'm just...
No. There's you can go back and forth in various ways on all these things. You know, I mean, I could, sure. I think I'm one of the last ones to ever defend the police. I disagree with the existence of the police myself. Yes. I think in a case like that, I think I can imagine the police were very hands-off because it was such a volatile situation that I think sure. They were probably loath, just like they're loath to make any arrests of black blockers when they're all massed together. I think they're probably loath to single out an individual in that situation, but
that's
no excuse. You know, and it's also too easy to say, yes, they could have prevented. I think, Mimi, I feel a little bit that it's too easy to say that, those murders could have been prevented had they acted. I mean, you know, it's just impossible to see the future. I mean, I think...
No, that's true.
Anyway, so yeah, I mean, it's a mess and it's complicated and the you know, and I don't have any answers, but I appreciate your calling and
Go ahead. I did want to say one more thing really quickly. When we meet, when we counter protest, we can't be screaming back at these people because it gets nothing accomplished. I think the most powerful thing is to be standing there with people that are obviously from other countries, other beliefs, all colors, all genders, all standing together, even if it's quietly and silently, as Gandhi espoused. That's the most powerful thing to do. Stand and show them that we outnumber them and that we are not going to resort to violence.
Well, my cynical, flippant response is, well, good luck with that on Sunday. But
oh, I understand. Yes.
Anyway, we'll see. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. And 503-231-8187 is the number to call in. I hadn't mentioned yet. I'm sure everybody's heard the other thing making the rounds of the local, regional, national media is the top Republican, what's his name here, said that of Portland, says the party should use militia groups. James Bacall says security forces may be appropriate as tensions rise after two people died in a racial attack on public transport. I mean, what horrible timing. I guess it's just shows his true colors that he came out with that. And it shows, obviously, the fear they have for the backlash against, you know, and it's ironically to me, it shows that he almost identifies. I mean, he does somewhat identify because he says he's willing to use these militia groups, these three percenters, you know, these patriots as militia groups for the Republican Party, which is, you know, exactly what people were concerned about, that people were infiltrating themselves into the Republican Party block during that, the what was eventually canceled, the 82nd Avenue of Roses parade, that, you know, people accused the Republican Party of not distancing themselves from people who apparently were going to infiltrate. Apparently, the people who ended up marching, from what I understand, were the ones who were going to be there present. And there's this anonymous email came out and said there's going to be 200 people come and pluck them out of the crowd and do whatever. And that led to the canceling of that 82nd Avenue of Roses parade, which led to the alt march, the alt-right march, Joey Gibson's crew, again, which I was present at. It was a very kind of bizarre, chaotic affair that's hard to characterize in any like real firm way. It's a very fluid thing. But yeah, so after all that, the head Portland Republican comes out and says they're going to use essentially, I mean, in a way, those people, you know, I don't know, is that unfair to say that? To protect them. I mean, what the heck's going on here? I mean, so not only are they, the Republicans, cravenly not calling out Trump and doing something about, you know, distancing themselves from, not, and who among the Republicans, there's a very, very few who are calling out what's going on. So not only are they not doing that, they're taking it even further and they're furthering this, you know, what some people might at first glance think is a conspiratorial interpretation, that there's this emergent fascism, that they're cynically using these free speech rallies, these emergent alt-right groups are the shock troops of fascism. Some people might, a lot of liberals might tend to shy away from that, but I mean, it seems to be coming to pass. It seems like the Republican Party itself is going along with that. So, do we have any other callers? Russell, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
Pretty good. Go ahead.
Okay, well, you know, I look at this, I'm from Chicago originally, and I think what we're lacking here is discipline, and we have this monoculture in Portland. It makes it very tempting for people like this guy to go out there and bully people. That wouldn't happen in Chicago, because any train car in Chicago is going to have some black people, some white people, lots of different races, Mexicans, and you just don't know who you're going to offend. You're going to deeply offend. In Portland, when he spouts that stuff, you know, there's maybe one or two people on the train in this case who say, no, you cannot do that. But I do wish those people had just shouted him down instead of pushed him down or something, because that gave him an excuse to go crazy.
Well,
let's hesitate to
reinterpret a situation that, you know, two people died in and one person went to the hospital and that you and I personally weren't at. I mean, I think right. It's just out of respect. I think we need to.
I hear you. I haven't seen any actual video of the thing, but it is interesting how.
And I have never heard that they actually pushed him or shoved him. So
I did hear that he was shoved down. It's been on CNN and stuff. But you know, when it's a white person, they're crazy. If it's a black person, they're a thug. If it's someone else, they're a terrorist. You know, this is our lingo. This is how we characterize people.
Well, I think your first point, you know, is really valid. You know, the whole Portland white city, sort of not just sort of being an ideological breeding ground, but just the fact that it is so white that gives people this feeling of license. That's an important point.
Yeah. So I don't know how to fix that, but we can try and fix some of that. But, you know, there's a thing on, I know you don't like NPR because they're sponsors, but some guy wrote a thing called Dream Hoarders. And this concentration of power in this elite, upper middle class, monoculture, almost like a sect, it's got a lot of people really burned up and hurt. And I think we got to address a more of a global thing. But Ted Wheeler is wrong to say don't let those guys, the alt-right people, do their thing, because, you know, it's the Constitution. We have to outshout them. I think we do. That's what we have to do.
All right. Well, listen, we got a couple other callers and only 3 minutes left.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling. And I admonish people to not wait till the last 10 minutes to call, as usual, but because we had so much time in the first 25 minutes. Anyway, let's go to our next caller. Mitch, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, with only 3 minutes left, I'm going to ask you, Paul, if in the future then, I wanted to draw you out because I've heard you speak about spending time in Italy and getting away from the craziness of American culture. And I spent most of the summer trying to speak to my own community, which tends to be the Jewish diaspora community, and especially the institutions that weren't coming out and speaking out about Jared Kushner's role in the Trump campaign and trying to monetize hate and all this white working class resentment. I just except for the ADL, I couldn't find any Jewish diaspora organizations that would speak out back in the spring and early summer before Trump became a front runner.
What a surprise, huh?
Candidate. And so I wanted you to speak about your time in Italy and whether there's much knowledge about the tragedy of before World War II, the Jewish wealthy community in Italy that actually were key supporters of Mussolini and the fascists. And
that I actually didn't know about. Now you're going to make me do some more research.
Well, my own Jewish community in America doesn't learn about it, and the Jewish institutions don't talk about it for obvious reasons. I mean, you know, it's not a big fundraiser. because you're appealing to the wealthy in America, and if they find out that the wealthy in Italy before World War II actually identified with the Trump of their times, and in fact Mussolini's mistress was Jewish, Madame Sarfatti, and all this stuff is discussed in Hebrew in Israel, but in English it's like it's not for those ears. We can, you know, can't air the dirty laundry. And I just wish we need to talk about this because America is going through a very similar situation.
All right, and you're the first person who's come right out and agreed that what I sort of tentatively put out there, that we are actually going through somewhat of a fascist thing, which of course lots of people have been talking about it, not just me, obviously. But thank you so much, Mitch. We only have a minute left. Let's quickly go to Eddie, if you have a quick thing to say.
Yeah. You got me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, very quickly, in support of the mayor's statement, I think the mayor knows that the federal government is not going to revoke a permit for that march, but that the mayor was making a statement against the politics behind the stabbing, and therefore I think that what's-his-name Gibson's march is actually in support of the politics behind that stabbing, so any decent person should come out and protest against that march.
Okay.
That's just my statement, and the other one is Fletcher, my brother, if you're listening to this, you survived that for a reason. You survived that for a reason. The Muslims believe in predestination. And, man, you saw what happened to him. He got cut from under his earlobe down to his belly button. He barely survived that thing. He's a poet. He has a voice. You know, speak. I'm completely in support of him. And that's that.
All right, man. Thank you so much. So, coming up this Sunday, if you dare, you should dare. It's important at least to be with like-minded people and, you know, have the kind of conversations that need to happen amongst ourselves, hopefully start to get over our own ideological differences, which were so important in impeding and not impeding the rise to power of Mussolini and Hitler, the infighting as well as they're not confronting in a timely way. Okay, we are at 8:59 and 15 seconds, so I got to get out of here. This Sunday, Terry Shrunk Plaza and surrounds, starting at noon or 12:30, depending. Be there, be square, or head up down to the city council at 9:30 for a speak out. Okay, this is Paul Rowland, KBOO Talk Radio.
Good morning. It's just about 9 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Here's what we have coming up for you during our public affairs programming till noon. At 9, that's just right now, Political Perspectives. Dr. Gerald Horn describes the alliance between the British and African Americans against the slave system of the U.S. in his book Negro Comrades of the Crown. At 10 o'clock, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock, we got the Project Censored, examining sexism within the media, especially at Fox News. And we thank you, KBOO members, for your great support during our pledge drive. Keep it coming. If you're not a member yet, you can go to kboo.fm on the web and become one very easily when you click on Donate. Thanks for doing that. And we're going to listen to a couple of announcements, and then we'll get right to Political Perspectives. Thanks for tuning into KBOO this morning.
After an investigation of the treatment of prisoners at the Oregon State Penitentiary, the Oregon Department of Corrections agreed